Hi, and welcome to Fully Boosted, episode 93. I'm Grant.
Well, fuck, I'm Brad. Yeah.
And I'm Pete.
And we are back. Good job on that, Brad. Next time, next time, I'll give you a clap, and we'll see if that helps you.
I was going to say, Brad, clap it out.
All right. Sorry.
And today we have a very special guest fresh off of WTC, the one and only Mr. Five Check. Jake Van Meter. Jake, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Why is that part of his intro?
I don't know. Why not?
We're not going to talk because we can't talk about it. WTC player.
I mean, everybody already knows. There's nothing else I could say to list all of his accolades. So
that's true.
Yeah. So I got to get him. Well, you know, we're not going to talk about Nova, so I just had to throw it in once. So, Jake, congrats on, I mean, I know we talked about this off mic. I mean, you went 6-0, which, you know, kind of matters, doesn't matter, whatever, however you want to take it at WTC. But the team overall placed 8th, so congrats to you guys. How was it over there?
It was a really good time. The reason why I played the game still after almost 13 years is the community. So this is... Ever since the WTC started and we went over to Belgium for the first time back in 2013, we meet a lot of awesome friends, players, people who just share a common interest, and that's the main reasons why I continue playing the game is the people.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people say that, felt similarly, like going to a con. I mean, I've obviously never been to WTC, but going to even just a con, the people you meet, I mean, that's the experience of that is kind of what keeps you going and what makes it fun. Winning probably helps too. I wouldn't know.
We're already self-deprecating.
Always.
Okay.
So I don't know. Where do we want to start? I guess we could talk about your lists and why you chose them and why your team, why you guys settled on the list you did. So obviously you're the only one here. So we'll talk about yours. So you want to talk about your Thags and Kallus list?
Yeah, so I took Kallus 1 in Primal Terrors and Thagrosh 1 in Children of the Dragon. The Kallus list, I decided to play that instead of Animag because going into WTC, Animag was like the hottest. Everybody was playing her. It was like the second coming of Legion. And knowing that, I decided to not play Animag and go a completely different route altogether. Kallus plays 100% different than Animag. Animag is very aggressive and relies on her feet to really push through the damage, whereas Kallus relies on his feet to kind of jam you out and gives you an extra turn to fight. So they absolutely do a little bit different gameplay than the Thags list I took because I was just comfortable with it. We were trying to figure out what other list I had to bring to cover a weakness, but we couldn't really find one. So I played Thags because I was playing them all year. And then I was going to play Thags on the invasion scenario because Kallus has a really hard time winning that scenario.
And then some
obscure matchups.
How many times did you play each caster?
I played Thagrosh on invasion and Kallus on every other scenario.
Nice.
Fitting.
So when you do list pairs, do you go for scenario play or do you go for... the pivot sweeper, like this one list can do everything and then I need this to cover its weaknesses.
So let's talk about pivot sweeper. I hate those terms and I will not talk when they are referenced as pivot or sweepers.
Oh no.
Well, that's thank, a cast, you, folks. Thank you, Matt McWaters and all those people.
That's a cast. Thanks, folks.
Yep.
All right. Terms you
yeah,
use,
the terms you want to use. Yeah.
Hammer,
so,
anvil.
Naturally, when I play games, I've always been an attrition player. Like, I just try to attrition you down, try to win on scenario that way because it's the safest and easiest thing to do. Typically, when you go for assassinations, even though you have, I don't know, a 90% chance assassination, it only takes that 10% to mess up right there, and then you lose the game. Like, sometimes you try to assassinate people with Saren and Ryze. It just doesn't work out. I don't know why.
I wasn't going to bring it up again, but yeah.
And I even told Brett at that game, I was like, I never go for these. and never do. And this is the reason why.
Yeah, it was like I put it close to a 99% after that first hit landed. And 1% was on my side.
It was a 73% chance before that.
Yeah, still feels bad for me.
But I went for it, and I feel stupid because I don't ever go for those because of that reason. So that's how I play. I'm very grindy, very attrition-oriented, very scenario-focused.
So with your pick of it was Thagrosh for Invasion, right? Was that just from experience, like you need to have that? Or, you know, how did you develop that theory that I need to have Thagrosh for this one scenario?
I brought Thagrosh because I was comfortable with him, because he was one of the only other lists I've been playing consistently for the year. And he has just a little bit more staying power on the table. Like, yeah, Kallus can feed and kind of jam you out, but there are certain lists that can actually push through that. And if you don't have... Kallus is like a first four-turn game. After you get through turn four, if you have one on scenario, his chance of winning tanks really hard. If the opponent knows how to position properly, you start losing pieces, you can't come back from it. Thagrosh can sit in the middle of the board and slug it out for multiple turns.
So if you're in a, and we'll get on to WTC, but I'm just fascinated by this. So you're in a list situation, you're on the table, you've got scenario invasion, you're like, I'm playing Thagrosh, and the off list, or your opponent's list, has nothing but RFP. Do you still drop Thagrosh, or do you bounce over to Kallus?
Depends on the list.
Okay.
All also right. Depends on the RFP. Some of it gets around Kallus' feet, some of it doesn't.
Gotcha.
There is, right? Is that true?
There's only one.
It's on disabled for Kallus' feet, so I'm wrong. Never mind.
Yeah, there's only like two things or three things in the game to get around his feet. It's like Hyperion, Hellmouth Maws, and
Eleeps.
Archangels. Anything with consume. And yes, Eleeps and collateral damage does too, but I'm saying specifically on like a disabled boxes.
Sure, yeah.
Can you talk about the choice to include Gudrun the Wanderer for those that don't know what he does?
I was just going to ask that, Brad.
So, he is by far the best flag scoring model in the game, period. He walks up to a flag, he feigns death, he sits there forever. That's what he does. You can't target him with ranger magic attacks, and the only way to contest the flag or get him off the flag is you have to have a feat to move him. You have to target something else around him with a spray and clip him, or run a model to contest. He also has 16 life, so he's really hard to kill. Like he's a 13-15, so when you start hitting him, he dies fast, but you still have to put like 3-4 attacks into him to get him to finally die.
Doesn't he have to stand up during activation?
No.
Mm-mm. Nope, he just can be knocked down, and then he has feigned death.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time he gets disabled, he heals and gets knocked down again.
So if anything has like grievous wounds, or you're next to a tree with entropic force or anything like that, like he doesn't heal, but they're it's really hard to get those abilities on him sometime.
Also, randomly, he's got a PAUF 15 weapon.
With Berserk.
Yeah. I've always... go ahead.
At Nova, he sat down on a flag for multiple turns, and then somebody woke him up, and he got mad. He walked across the map, a little table we were playing, until he finally walked up to about 6-4 to guard and killed him because he was mad. They woke him up.
I've always looked at him in Signar, and then I'm like, well, nobody ever plays him or talk about him, and I fell into the trap of like, okay, well, he must be garbage then, and then never looked at him again.
This is part of the mentality where because somebody hasn't played it yet and like shown people or try to like work outside the box oh my God, I can't even speak today. People aren't expanding and trying new things, and because of that, he's not being looked at. But I hope after this weekend or after some of the tournaments I've played with him that people finally start including him more, because he's really good.
Yeah. Why is it that you think people don't go outside the box with their choices?
I couldn't tell you. Maybe they don't. It could be a limited amount of playtime. They want to go to tournaments at their local store on the weekend, and they want to focus on winning list stuff that people have played and proven and have just been kind of proven. So they take those lists and focus there rather than try something new.
Yeah, I would think that's probably right. People don't want to, or can't, right? If they don't have the time, they can't put the reps in. So they go, oh, hey, so-and-so won with this list. It must be good. I'm just going to play it. I mean, I've fallen into that. I'm sure everybody has at some point, but...
But even though somebody takes, like, a meta list or a list that somebody else has won with like 30 times, it doesn't mean that that person is going to have the knowledge and the capability and the mindset to play it the way that player does.
Yep. And we'll, I want to come back to that. We're going to get into some of that a little bit later, but let's get back to WTC. I don't know how a part of the process you were, but how did you guys end up settling on your, I mean, I know you had the red, but how'd you settle on the team you guys settled on?
So the process for picking the teams this past year wasn't what I would call necessarily the best process. I think they're going to expand on it more this upcoming year and how they pick the teams. But I think this year that there was a team captain selected, and then that team captain picked their team, and then the other team kind of formulated itself. That's how I think it worked.
Gotcha.
So, Jake, if you were in charge of team selection, how would you go about doing it?
Have everybody talk together, determine a faction breakdown of how you want each team built, and then after you determine who helps balance what teams out by faction, then maybe you also go deeper and determine it by kind of by location.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of how the Florida meta did it, where they were trying to get one team to be included together so that they could practice together. Like, that's not a bad idea. Like, that idea is concrete and it makes sense. If you have a team that plays together, they're going to get more reps together, understand how things are going together, be able to talk more together because they're physically around each other, especially if they're in like one local home store. So I know that might not happen because you have different regions like East, like Mid, and then West, but something like that might work.
Do you think it could go to a regional format like you're saying, like a East, West, and Central United States kind of thing?
I can see that working.
So I don't know what it's going to, but I think we've all heard that next year the formatting for selecting teams will be different than it is currently.
It'll be good. I'm excited for that.
Cool. I was just curious. I was always looking through and like, hey, you know, obviously we know Edison was the ATC winners who we've had on this cast before, so I was just curious about the other two. So let's get into the WTC itself. Again, whatever we want to talk about or not talk about is totally fine. But we had, who did you guys hit first? You guys ended
Russia
had Russia round one.
Well, did I don't remember. Did you play in the grudge match the day before?
Ooh,
I did not. So okay, something I like doing, and this is just part of my just how I function at tournaments, is that I typically don't play the first day. And it's because I don't want to play against people where people can see how I play or understand how I play or see what I do. So if I play a game, it'll be with like a friend somewhere where they can't watch. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to play against Canada in a grudge match and then have other people watching, because it'll be like, oh, that's the Kalthus. This is how it plays. Watch him do it so you understand how it's going to happen tomorrow. Like, I don't like that. And that's the reason why I don't play first day games.
Hmm. Interesting. Unless they matter, right? So like Nova team tournament was first day, and then Masters Heats was second day.
So yeah, once we start playing like actual like tournament games, like the team tournament was a tournament game, like then I'm going to play my list. Then you can watch me. I don't care.
Gotcha.
Hmm. Well, like the fun pickup games is what you're talking about.
I play some every once in a while. Like I played one pickup game with Mike per year at WTC the day before, because he wanted to play like High Reclaimer into Kalos, thinking that double adjudicators can't kill a bazillion warrior models. Who would have thought? Hey, they can, and they kill a Blightbringer too, in case anybody wanted to know.
That is that is all shocking information to me.
Adjudicators kill everything, especially when they have double signs of importance.
Yeah,
fair and balanced. Anyway, yeah, I'm very spiteful about that model right now. And I played a friendly pickup game at Adepticon. Was it Adepticon? I think it was, with Danny McGeehan, who also got second at WTC Solo Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I played one pickup game with him there, but I can't remember the last time I played a pickup game at a con. You're going to play all weekend in tournaments. It's just so much.
I mean, some people enjoy it.
Well, I also typically, when I go through a tournament other than Nova, even though I lose, I still play through. Like, normally I don't drop.
It's because there's two qualifying heats. Like, you didn't necessarily drop from the event. You went to the other qualifying heat.
Yeah, they specifically set it up for that purpose so that you can jump over. So you're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. You just drop and fuck Brad's strength of schedule. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Lachlan, though, 2014. And for one straight year from 2013 to 2014, the DOU like match pairing system was messed up. And every single tournament I played that year, when if Tom Guan was at the tournament automatically paired us up round one, every tournament.
What?
Every tournament we played round.
I don't think that's a glitch. I think that's the organizers conspiring.
So Tom and I went 50-50 that year. So there were a bunch of tournaments where I got knocked out first round and I went into loser's bracket. And then there was at Lock and Load 2014, Tom beat me, and then I went to loser's bracket, and then I lost my second round, too, and I'm playing, like, third, fourth, and fifth round, and people are like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I lost. That's what I'm doing here. Let's play some games. They're like, this sucks.
Yeah, they're like, fuck, man. I'm in the 1-3 bracket. I just want to have fun. Like,
I was in the 0-2 bracket, and people were like, are you supposed to be here? I'm like, this is table 38. Yeah, this is where I'm playing.
That was... like Nova, Gibbs, and Banky, the 1-3 bracket. Everyone's like, what happened?
Just because people either play a lot or they might be known people in the community doesn't mean that they don't lose games. Everybody loses games. It's part of, like, what happens.
I don't know. I'm still under the belief that Charleston only loses when he wants to lose.
That could be fact.
So anyway, back to Russia.
Yes.
You crushed the red wave.
Yes, we went 5-0 that game. Our team went 5-0. The pairing process was simple. They had a Sorcerer 1 player, and I said, I cannot play Sorcerer 1, because Sorcerer 1 into Kalos will absolutely destroy me. And I was like, do everything possible to make that not happen.
So let me ask about your guys' overall process. Was... if given the chance, I assume you guys wanted more matchups. Was that your guys' theory in every round, or does that change round to round?
It changes round to round. I think for the most part, during the weekend, we settle on tables more than matchups.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, like, you got to think about it. Like, Legion has double Hellmoth. Proper Hellmoth placement wins the games.
Yeah.
Behind a building, behind a forest. There was one round that we took tables against Kreos 1 double Judicator. You know, when you're hiding behind a house and they can't draw a line of sight to you, you can't die when you're knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just depend round to round. So, like, the last round, we took matchups against England. Against Poland, we took tables. Yeah, I want to say it was probably 50-50 that we did three of both.
Okay. I'm always curious about... I find team tournaments fascinating, so I'm always curious about people's processes when they go through the matchups.
How many times did you guys win the roll to decide who was going first?
I think we won three. We went 3-3 on that as well.
Okay.
And in some of those, we picked the choose table, we picked to go first, and then when our opponents won, they also told us to pick tables, and it was like a combination of both, so I don't know the actual breakdown of that.
Sure.
But it varies team to team how our process for leading individuals would be. Months prior to the event, we were just talking about a possible strategy up until list release, like a few weeks before the event. After list release a few weeks before the event, we started deep diving certain teams and just trying to like talk through like how we would lead the pairing process to avoid certain matchups for certain players.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that multiple times for each of like 20 specific teams that we thought would be like a problem based on what they were bringing, and then hope that that would carry over into just being able to do a quick matchup process for teams that we didn't do it with.
Did that work the way you thought?
For the most part, I think 75% of it worked as we wanted it to, as it was intended. You're never going to be able to get 100% perfect like pick for every team. It's hard because you can never anticipate what the opponent's going to lead, or because everybody's like, I have this specific matchup I want to avoid. And other people are like, that's a slam dunk for me. I'm going to play that matchup. And then on the other team, like this Legion player, an example, wants this Circle player. He's like, that's a slam dunk for me. And then the Circle player on the other team's like, that Legion player is a slam dunk for me. and they're like, they both think that that person's like a good matchup for them. That makes any sense. Like, everybody's viewpoint is different.
Yep. Nope. We've gone through exercises with that for obviously local or ones where I went through the same thing with my team. It's like, well, it can't be a good match for both of you. So what's going on?
So let me tell you, I hate the term like slam dunk and things like that, because everybody in any game that you play has a chance to win. Yeah, you might have a really shit matchup and it might be hard, but you can still win basically unwinnable games through proper play, good dice, good luck. It's still possible.
So what War Machine terms do you like? Slam dunks out, sweeper pivots out. What terms are on the table?
Are there more terms?
We'll make them up if we have to.
Then you make some up and get back to me, and I'll approve them later. Five podcasts from now, you'll bring up a term, call me in, and say, Jake, do you approve? I'll be like, no, and then leave.
Okay, perfect. New segment. This is great.
Jake Van Meter's approved War Machine terms. All right, so keep you out of the Kador player. Beyond that, Mercenaries, Rhett, Menoth, and Kryx. Any of those hard dodges, any of those you were looking to try and get into, or just avoid you out of Kador?
So how it worked, that for the most part, I'm a very modest player, and I look at matchups, and I'm very honest. Like, I'm very, like, for lack of a better term, like, I'm self-doubting when it comes to matchups. Like, I always be like, oh, man, that's a really bad matchup. I can't beat that matchup. I always like that with a lot of matchups. And in this pairing selection process, I was like, they want to get that Sorcerer 1 player on me, because that Sorcerer 1 player is just going to ruin my day. And the only way to get me to avoid playing Sorcerer 1 is that I'm the second person out for the team. When they put me down, they had to put me out second so that I had the option of picking who I was going to play. Mm-hmm. Sorcerer 1's my worst matchup, and then Harbinger would be my second bad matchup because I have no Grievous Wounds in my list. And that's what ended up happening. They put me down second so I could pick which of my two bad matchups I wanted to play.
I just have this picture in my head when they're doing their process and like their matrix, and Jake, because he's so self-defeating, like sends back and it's all red. And everybody's like, what the fuck, Jake? There's no way. It's like, nope, they're all bad.
Well, that wasn't like that for everything, but it also depends on the scenario as well.
What was the scenario against Menoth player?
Oh, it was Mirage.
Against Harbinger.
Yes, Mirage is probably Kallus' best scenario, and it is the worst scenario for the health of the game.
Mm. Isn't also one of Harbinger's best scenarios?
Yeah, it is.
So then everyone wins. It's fine then.
Yep, it's two controlling infantry feats against each other. It's such a good game.
I mean, yes.
So anything particularly, I mean, obviously we already talked about that you won. Anything particularly interesting, exciting about that game? How did that kind of go for you?
I hit a Kiki Monk. I forgot his name. I never remember his name. People just call it a Kiki Monk. And I pulled him to my Hellmouth Maw. I hit him when he was defense 18. What is it? A Legion of the Order of the Fist. Zosha's correcting me because she's still being a judge.
Thank you, Zosha.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. They say thank you. So I got him to the Maw, but I didn't consume him. I missed him, and then he dodged away, and then my other tentacle killed him. So I got one Legion of the Order of the Fist out of the way. That would be like in my zone contesting, being martyred every turn.
Forever, yeah.
Forever. And I was able to like super jam him with my feet and just kind of like box everything, and that was going to get into near the flags. So I was able to score two on his turn, two on my turn, and then I ran everything that was in his zone away, make room for the Blightbringer to kill the objective.
Did anyone else on your team land in or not that you did, but did anyone else on your team land in matchups that they weren't looking for particularly, or did anyone land when they were really gunning for? At least if you remember.
I don't remember. Everybody, for the most part, seemed pretty okay with the matchups, from my recollection.
If that's the case, I think round two, you boys hit the England Lions.
We did hit the England Lions. So on this team, a lot of the matchups for me personally were pretty bad. And my goal was to hopefully be dropped into the Kador player. That's what I wanted.
All right, why were they bad matchups? Just a real quick before we actually go into it, the England Lions consisted of Kador running Zarkova 1 and Karchev, Signar running Haley 3 and Stryker 1, Pat Dunford running Old Witch 3 and Dreamer 1, Higher Claimer 1 and Amon, and then Lich 1 and Lich 3 as the list pairs.
So in that pairing, I either wanted to play against Kador or the Krix with Lich 3 and Lich 1. The Dreamer can be a problem for some Primal Terrors, especially if you don't know how to position properly. The Kalosis can struggle a little bit with some of the Arcana. I have no Grievous Wound, so I can't stop Sacrifice if he picks it. And then Dreamer, because I have very static threat ranges, can play pretty aggressive and start sleeping multiple Chosen, which then blocks in my Blightbringer and prevents a lot of charge lanes. So I've played it a couple times and haven't felt really comfortable into it. And also on Invasion, like, that's Grimkin's wet dream of a scenario. It's like the most dead scenario, and they brick up in the center and touch all the zones, and they just sit there for 7 turns. That's how they play that game. Who else was it? Oh, yeah, they have High Reclaimer with Judicators. Nobody wants to play against that, so that's the reason why I didn't want to play against it.
It was High Reclaimer with a single Judicator, yep.
I mean, it could be... Yeah, it's a single Judicator, but it still does the work of, like, 2. Right? And then... And then Haley 3 just absolutely floor wipes Alice with the amount of attacks they have.
Yep.
So I'm all for being put into those matchups to help the team get better matchups. It is a team format, and although, like, you know, people do care about personal records, sometimes players who go 1-5, 2-4, 3-3, they take those matchups in order to possibly win a losing game in order to help the team maybe go 3-2 or 4-1.
So I know that you ended up landing into the Karchev player, but how did your team navigate it to make sure that you landed in that matchup, or to at least help your odds of getting that matchup?
Well, the first thing we did was we led with Brent, and we led with Brent so that we would pull out Dunford's Signar, or oh my god, Dunford's Grimkin, and then Brent jumped on that in order to help everybody else have a better matchup, or hopefully fall into better matchups.
Okay.
And it just so happened that after he went out, who was left behind? It wasn't the Kador, or was it the Kador player? It might have been the Kador player. Maybe, I think it was Grimkin Kador that came out first.
Seems reasonable. Zarkova 1 seems like a decent drop in the Signar.
And then he took Grimkin, and then we put out myself, and I think it was... Yeah, I think it was Mike. I think we put up per year. And then he took me, and then the other Menoth player came out, and then the Menoth people fought each other. And I think the other two fell, and Keith went against Haley 3, and Jeremy went against the other Krix. A lot of Krix in this WTC were trying to find and hunt the other Krix, is what I saw at a lot of tables.
That seems correct, yes. And you're correct on the matchups as well. You had a Krix mirror, and then also the
Menoth mirror.
The Menoth mirror. Yep.
Yep.
I got dropped into Karchev. I looked at it, and at first I was going to run Kalos. I was like, let's try to go 6-0 with, you know, play all my games with Kalos. And I looked at his list. I was like, I could probably play both of them, but I was looking at that Karchev list, and for some reason I was just really doubting in myself with the Kalos list in that scenario. So I eventually just fell on Thags. I was like, I'll play one with Thags. I think he can push through because he has a bunch of. Only POW 16 jacks if I can get rid of the Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I can get rid of the Juggernaut early, I could probably have a game. And I felt really comfortable playing into Zarkova. Like, I didn't think she had the damage potential to push through.
And the matchup for that round, you're absolutely correct, was...
Thagrash Karchev.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, then that Karchev list, I don't think, brings in any elements of RFP to deny Thagrash's feat, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, it seems good.
The game was still really close. Anytime you bring, like, an abundance of models to the table, mm-hmm. And you get to make more attacks, means that you can either spike low, spike high, or anything like that. So, obviously, the more attacks you bring, you give yourself a greater chance of variance, I guess. Right?
Yep.
So it just highlights that game really quick.
Yeah.
It was a really tight, really clean game. And the reason... And this was up for a debate for a long time. My Thagrash list has 10 Hex Hunters and Bale, and there's another version of the list that goes around with 7 Hex Hunters, or six Hex Hunters, Bale, and Ice Witches. Now, I wouldn't have had a chance in this game if I had seven Hex Hunters. There's no way. Because he has a bunch of, like, special power attack or special attack jacks, and my Hex Hunters kept on denying them the ability to combo smite and to rain a death and to do stuff like that.
I don't want to sound naive here, but how are you denying them that ability?
Because Hex Hunters have Hex Bolts.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing. Stop special attacks.
Jesus, Brad.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Can't make special attacks or power attacks. Special action, special attacks, or power attacks for one round.
So all the combo smiting jacks couldn't combo smite.
Yeah, Jake, good pick there. I like the reasoning, and I learned something.
And then my opponent, there's two big things of the game. Normally, my dice tend to be like kind of on the average to like crap range. And in this game, for the first two turns of the game, Azrael's dice blew up like super hardcore. Like one Kodiak, I shot him twice on the top of two. I think it was top of two. And I did something like 28 damage to it.
Whoa.
And then he runs at me and positions his Juggernaut next to an objective. And then I move over Azrael and I throw two spears at that guy. And I did about 29 damage to him.
Damn.
Yeah, my dice were on fire. And then his turn, he came in and started fighting my heavies, and his dice, they just weren't really with him. If his dice were average or slightly above average in that first engagement, he probably would have had the game.
Nice. So you guys overall, you win, and you guys pull out the team win, 3-2. And then
it was a very scary game, like it was a scary matchup going, because at the end it was like, it was 2-2, and like I pull our teammate aside, and I'm like, don't say anything to him. Let him play his game and don't put pressure on him to win.
Did you know, like, did you have any idea what the scores were? No.
Yeah, after my game finished, I was the second to last game. So once my game finished, 2-2. So then I looked over, and I think Jeremy Lee was still playing. And I was like, oh, shit. The game is still going.
I asked, just a real quick thing. So you won't let your teammates know how the round standings are looking?
Not the ones who are, like, if it's a 2-2 situation where they have to win their game, you mm-hmm. don't want to put, like, some people work well under pressure, but some people don't. So I would prefer not to go over to my opponent and be like, yeah, we're 2-2. You have to win your game now. I'd rather him just focus on playing his game the best of his ability, and then afterwards he can look up at us, or in his own time, if he, like, looks over and just understands what's going on, that's fine. But I'm not going to, like, tell him.
Sure. So round three, you guys played Italy Mario. I don't know if you remember what the scenario was there.
The scenario there was Recon 2.
Alice's
second best scenario.
And they had... Brad, do you have them up?
I can.
I got
it. WTC, does the WTC release the scenarios ahead of time? I can't remember.
No.
Okay.
So it was six rounds, so they were going to run every scenario once.
Gotcha, sure. Gotcha. Yeah. So
we had Grimkin with Child and King of Nothing, Resheth and Xerxes 2 and Scorn, Signar with Striker 2 and Striker 1, Trolls with Colgrimma and Madrak 1, Circle with Bradagus and Kruger 2, and Convergence with Axis and Lucant. So what was the thought process here?
My team has this weird image of Grimkin. Like, a lot of people wanted to avoid the Grimkin. This time, with his pairing of King of Nothing and Child, I felt like I could take that off them. So I wanted to hopefully fall into that matchup. And I don't know how they made it happen, but they did it by... I'm trying to remember how. I'm sorry, I don't have like all the info.
No, that's okay.
They made it fall a certain way so that the Grimkin player... Like, we took matchups that time so that eventually at the end we would pick the last two matchups, and the idea was to get... hopefully have the Grimkin fall to the bottom, and then I would take them. Right. And I think they were letting Grimkin fall because I don't think the Grimkin had a really terrible matchup.
And you think the Grimkin player was looking to play into you, or that's why they kept like holding him on the shelf waiting for your list to come out?
I think the Grimkin player just had a good list into the field, so they let him fall in order to just pick up whatever was at the end. That's what was my take on it.
So you end up getting that, and we end up with, I guess I'll ask, what was your thoughts going there? So we have Child and King of Nothing.
So against both of those, because he wasn't like the Dreamer and able to stationary my models, I was just going to run my army at him and feet and just keep amok on the flag so that his Gremlin Swarms couldn't run through my army.
Hmm.
That was my plan. And that's what I did. So the way I play Kallus is a lot of people, they play the Blightbringer as this anchor piece that sits in the back of the army, kind of dirtles around, and then shoots you every turn. How I play them is I run them at you. I run them at you two turns in a row, and then I feet and insulate them so nobody can get to them. So in this game, I did that too. I ran at them and feeted on the top two. And when I ran at them and feeted, my Blightbringer was like 3 inches away from four heavies. But he could never get to them.
Can you stop giving away the advice on how to play the Blightbringer in that list?
He should sit back and shoot every turn.
That's for, yeah.
Yeah, great. Yep. Sit back
and shoot. I think in my game against you with Terminus, my Blightbringer was across the midline.
It was. I went forward with Terminus.
But then he couldn't fit anymore. That's why he didn't go any farther.
Well, I kind of brought Terminus to him.
Yeah. You never attacked him, though. It was sad.
I did not. No, but if you could stop telling people how to use their Blightbringer with that list, it would only help, I think, everyone else.
Mm-hmm. You have to be able to really push that model's melee presence on the board in order to really get 32 points out of it. That's how I feel about it.
I've just cut that whole section and just the part where he says you should stand back and shoot. Does that sound good?
You can do that. That's all up to you. <It's> your podcast.
just edit Jake's sentences together to make
yeah.
Sense. What is he talking about?
Yeah. So you do that with Kallus, anything noteworthy of that, or is that pretty much how that game went?
So my opponent made really good plays to contest the flag. And what he was able to do is that he was able to find cheeky trample lanes after using Force Hammer to like slam my Chosen around to get his heavies within contesting range. So while I wasn't necessarily winning the game really fast, I scored like 1 point here, 1 point there. What ended up happening is that as he was coming into the flag, I would basically kill a free heavy every turn with my Blightbringer in order to make him not lose on scenario.
Mm-hmm. And you pull the win out, and the team goes
4-1. Mm-hmm.
So in the round three, it looks like it was Keith versus their Menoth player. You had... I'm wrong. I'm sorry.
It was Keith versus
versus Circle player.
Yeah, it was Gatsby Slayers versus Bradigus.
Yep.
Wolves. Friend Simon hit Reshef. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. No, that game's a really cagey game. It just that game can go either way. I don't feel like it's favored in one side or the other.
You had Brent Simon hit Reshef. Mike played Harvey into Striker 1. And Jeremy Lee had Scar 1 into Cole Grima.
No, it was the other way around. It was Mike got into played into Cole Grima, and then Jeremy played into Striker 1.
Oh, really?
Then they have it. Yes. Yeah, they have it flip flopped.
This
on the
is
website,
wrong online. Well, the internet is a liar, apparently.
That's probably the hardest thing. Is I don't think there is a definitive source of what happened. There's multiple conflicting reports after the fact.
Yeah, a lot of those games were really close. Like Jeremy was playing against Striker 1, and I remember. On the bottom of one of his Wraith engines was at one life.
What?
And he had to run it back to get repaired and then put it back into scenario later. In Mike's game, he played against Cole Grima, and he had to basically live through a possible assassination attempt, which he did, thankfully. So any of those games could have went either way. And then I know Brent was playing against the Sheth, and he was like shooting turtles off the table, which was pretty good for him. And then Keith was okay the first couple of rounds of his game, killing a couple of models here and there. But then eventually, with the feet and the shifting stone placement, I think he was able to get a ported, feated, wold white onto Gatsby, I think, or something like that.
If his feet's not up, he's not the toughest caster to kill.
That's true.
I mean, even with his feet up, a synergy chained model can still put him in the dirt.
If you're a wold white and you have 3 attacks and you're on fire and your synergy, you know, plus 3 and you have plus 2 strength, you're probably going to kill Gatsby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But at the end of day 1, Team Rockefeller 3-0.
So at this type of competition, this two-day event that we spent a lot of money and time to go across, you know, the world to play. Like, there's always the first day jitters. Like, the first round is always the most nerve-wracking round. Hmm. You don't know who you're going to get, and all you want to do is that you want to get out of round one and say, okay, guys, we beat round one. We're good. You know, we didn't just go home after round one.
Makes sense.
Just scary feeling.
No, no, for sure. I was going to compare it to
a con. What's the team feeling going into day two? Did the team feel like they hit the matchups they were looking for? Comfortable with the list? Comfortable with the way that they were playing into the field?
We felt pretty good with how our list selection process went, how we were matching up, how certain individuals were being like led at certain times. We liked what was happening. Going into day two, the first team we play against is Poland South, and mm-hmm. part of our matchup process and something that we spent 2 days focusing on these matchups like a week before, because we were looking at this list. We're like, wow, their lists are terrible for us.
Poland South specifically?
Yeah. Mm. That was probably our biggest like red flag.
So just to go over their list real quick, Poland South had two Menoth players, a Convergence player, Circle player, and a Crix player. Their Crix player has Denegra 1 in Scourge and Lich 3 in Black Industries. Specifically, it has two Inflictors Malice, 5 Slayers, and then Ripjaws for its lights. We have their first Menoth player is Higher Claimer with a single Judicator, an Exemplar Interdiction, and then Krios 1 and Creator's Might with two Judicators. Then their other Menoth player has Serenia with two Judicators, and a Resnik 2 player running in Fateful Masters with four Heavies, double Max Skyhammers, and double Max Idrians. I'm sorry, one Mid Idrian, one Max.
Yep.
They have a Convergence player running Locke and Orion, both in Destruction Initiative. Specifically, though, Orion is like the all-electricity list with the Conflux and Modulators. And then their Circle player is both in Quartz and Bones with Kruger 2 and Bradagus.
I just have a question real quick, Jake. Did you guys know who you were playing round four after round three? Like, did you have the night knowing you guys were playing Poland South?
Or did you? We did.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, what they started doing like years ago is that they would let you know who you were playing the next day, first round. So it gave you time to prep. That night, we went aside and we started like redoing the pairing process again and again and again, doing it like we lost the role, who they led, and then how we would counter, and we did it all the way down for each player. Like, we led me, we led Keith, we led Brent, and then we played it out how we thought that it would go for each player being led at certain times.
Do you personally like that? Like, do you think that's better? I mean, obviously a lot of people, more time to think about it, but do you think overall that's a better way to do it than having them find out the next morning? Because, I mean, it's really the only round that you get that for, right?
I think it adds a little bit of I like it. I like what it does. It allows you to think, you know, you sleep on it, and I think that's perfectly fine. I liked it.
So then we go in the morning. Does the matchup process play out at all the way you guys thought?
I think before we get there, why did their combination of lists present such problems for your team?
Sure. Yeah, let's start with that.
It's very easy. It's because they had double Judicators in two lists.
Oh.
That is true.
Yeah.
They had a Krios 1 player double Judicator and Serenia with two Judicators.
So let me tell you how a Kalos 1 game plays into a double Judicator when he knocks down your army. You don't. You just go home.
I know with Brent's list, I know he doesn't want to see that.
Yeah, there's a lot of us didn't want to see it. But in this round, if you notice something common throughout all their lists have huge bases. So, and we were looking at the tables, and we're like, if we win the roll, we're picking tables in order to try to screw them on terrain.
Did that come to fruition?
It did. We picked tables.
Which means you only get to pick two of the five matchups, correct?
True, yeah.
I mean, I know that, but I just want to make sure everyone at home is following along.
Thanks for helping, Brad.
You're welcome. So who do you lead with?
We led... Now I think about this. So this time, I know what was going to happen is that they were going to let me fall to the bottom. That was the plan. And this time, the pairing process, it did not work out how we wanted it to. Like, the leads were wrong, and what ended up happening is that eventually We wanted to avoid the Crix into Crix here. We did not want Jeremy into Crix because he's going to play Denny 1 and try to backlash stuff and things like that. And it's like a list chicken because he was playing, I think, Denny 1 and Slayers, right?
He played Denegra 1 into Scar 1. Jeremy played Scar and then...
What was his other list?
I'm sorry, what was whose other list?
The Poland South.
Yeah, Lich 3 was Slayers.
Yeah, Poland South has Denegra 1 Scourge and Lich 3 Black Industries.
So we didn't want Jeremy into that matchup because it's like a list chicken. Because Scar is really good on the pit because it's like a central scenario and models have to be there. And Scar loves feeding on everything in the center of the table and then killing your stuff in the center of the table. So that's like one of Scar 1's best scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But Denny 1 has Backlash and ways of, or with the Styx's theme, has Backlash. Sure. And it's a good way to kill the caster if they've already cut and they're low on life.
Also correct. And that actually was... the matchup. At least according to WH Army Reporter, it is Scar 1 versus Denegra 1.
Yeah, so that ended up happening. I fell against Tomas, who was playing the Kruger and Bradigus list in Bones. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that's what the matchup was going to be falling down, only because Kruger 2 is notoriously like one of the Primal Terrors drops.
Why is that?
He just has a lot of like control elements that keep models away, and he has a pretty cool range presence on the first like 1 to 2 turns of the game to kind of like pick out chosen and move models around and just kind of mess with where you're trying to be.
Do you find that they're hunting for a mock to try and make it so Rebuke does something meaningful in the game, or is it just really a combination of the feat plus range presence and TK kind of doing what TK does?
It's kind of that. If they get a mock... they get a muck and it's really beneficial because then you can rebuke, but you shouldn't play the game and try to go deep dive in to get a muck. If it presents itself, take it. But if it doesn't present itself, don't be like upset about it. You just have to pick apart any models that advance up while you can. Like if there's a couple chosen kind of at the front, pull them out as you can, kill one without giving up anything, kill two without getting up anything. And that's how you get kind of the advantage against the list. At least my list.
I mean, that's reasonable. So it looks like also this round you had, and I don't know the order these players came out in, but Keith landed into their protector player that's running High Reclaimer. And I'm sorry, who did you pair with? He is High Reclaimer and Krios 1. So according to WGR Reporter, it was Keith running Lich 3 against High Reclaimer, which has Max Vengers, Max Errants, and a mid Idrian with UA.
Rent ended up playing into, I think it was a Sirena.
Yep. Yep.
All right. And then Jeremy played Denny 1, and then Mike played against the Convergence player. So one of the other reasons why I was falling was because they wanted me to take the Convergence off their hands too. Like that was like that Convergence list with all like the lightning attacks that aren't attacks is bad for my Kallus list. Mm-hmm. And I might have ran bags in that if I got paired against that. But a lot of people were like, that's a trouble matchup. Like, I can't win that matchup. So my job was to either take that or to try to get the circle. Because people were worried about the circle, too.
Yep. So you end up with the circle player. So we end up with Kallus into Kruger, too.
Mm-hmm. Was there any really interesting plays or large swings in that game that came up?
So the game ended on... the game went all the way to bottom of 7, and we were tied on control points, and it went to army points destroyed.
Wow.
That's how that game ended up. I ended up winning. He had 76 army points destroyed, and I had 90. So the game went all the way to turn 7. His dice... so what I did at the beginning of the game is that I deployed my Hellmouse. I went second. One was like in the forest without having line of sight to it. It was more than 3 inches in this forest, so he really couldn't attack it. That's over in my right zone with my objective. I put the left Hellmouth really far up by a house, but I kept it in both zones so that I could try to contest. However, when I left it up there, I put it in a spot where if he really, really wanted to, he could put a lot of effort into TKing and moving his models to get line of sight to it to try to put a ton of attacks into it to try to remove it first turn. And if he goes for it, it kind of pushes his resources and his army off to one side of the table and kind of like splits his forces. Immediately, because there's this like weird house in the center of the table, and he ended up going for it. He ends up rolling kind of poor overall, but he ends up eventually with, like, a, I think it was, like, one of his last attacks with, like, a Wold Ward and casting Gallows. He ends up killing it on my left helmet. So I gave that away for kind of, like, a table positioning.
If you didn't position it there in the beginning, because I know you said it ended tied on control points and got army points destroyed. If that model wasn't there and you had a second Hellmouth alive, are you able to win that game on control points, you think? Or is it still kind of shake out in the same manner?
I think it still shakes out in the same manner. His dice, on the second turn when he really had the ability to feed me away after attacking me, his dice didn't really pull through for him. He was making, like, Gallows attack rolls where he wasn't pulling me far enough, or he wasn't damaging me, or he wasn't hitting me. Like, you're talking, like, boosted sixes. Like, he was missing a significant amount. His dice were very underwhelming on his turn that he really wanted to get work done.
Mm.
So then he feeds me away in order to make space so that I don't retaliate, and just absolutely, like, swing the game there.
So you're able to pull it out for the team, but unfortunately, Rockefeller hits their first loss of the event. I think falling 1-4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike's game was really close. He had the chance of going to army points destroyed. His game state was just Harvey and Adjudicator on the table against a couple of the heavies and Orion. And at the end, he had to shoot a rocket at the objective, hit it, and then roll like a boosted Science Importance 10 to kill it. And he didn't. So he lost his game, or it didn't go to army points destroyed, which he had a chance of, I think, winning it on army points. I think Keith ended up timing out on his game. That's what I think happened. I wish that they would show you what happens at the end of the game, if it was, like, time, if it was scenario, if it was cast or kill, what turn.
Yeah.
So it doesn't show you the turn, but it does say that Keith did lose on clock.
Okay.
Against
I know that game was really close to you. Like, Keith could have pulled it out if he had a little bit more time, based on the discussions that we had with him. And then Jeremy ended up getting Backlash assassinated after, like, halfway through the game, which is what he was worried about.
It's especially with a cast that's going to kill themselves a little bit, it's kind of tough to avoid that at times.
Yeah. I think it was Haley 3 into Siege 2. Was that what it was, or was, am I wrong?
Whose game?
It was Brent's
was Siege 2 into Serenia.
Serenia, sorry.
And so it was the double adjudicator with what's that spell called that Shirker 2 has that she also has?
Positive charge.
Positive charge.
Yep.
So that list is very unique. Is if you like looking at it from the outside in, you're like, what's this list actually do? What the list really does is that it utilizes Rockwall to prevent models from being able to appropriately engage them at the right time. That's what it does. So it's just a very interesting list to bring to this format.
Why do you say it like that?
I liked it. Nobody was expecting it. And then when you see it actually working on the table, you're like, wow, that's really, really good.
But also not a list you would have probably thought about and prepped for prior to seeing it. Yeah, so a little dark horse factor. Go ahead.
How much rep have people actually had in Serenia anyway, realistically?
Yeah.
I've played it against her once.
Yeah.
It's all the experience I'll probably ever get.
I played against her twice in CID, and that was it.
You could have played her against her WTC.
I could have, but I wanted to avoid all the meta. That was my goal.
So, the unfortunate loss there, and then we have round 5 where you guys get Germany Poltergeist. What was the scenario here? Because I think Spread the Net was the last one, so this one would have had to be...
Breakdown.
Breakdown, yeah.
Right? Yeah, this is another good one for Kallus.
So
Kallus has 4 really good scenarios and 2 kind of miss scenarios. The Pit 2 is kind of a miss scenario, and then Invasion is also a bad scenario for him, and the other 4 are all live and really good for him.
So just to run through Germany Poltergeist, their team makeup is of Circle, Trolls, Scorn, Legion, and Krix. So 4 hordes, 1 War Machine. Their Circle players playing both in Bones with Wormwood and Kruger 2. Their Troll player has Kolgrimma in Storm of the North and Gunnbjorn also in Storm of the North. Then we go on to their Scorn player playing Xerxes 2 in Imperial Warhost. The list notably has double Derp Turtle and Desert Hydra, so 3 huge bases and then 4 with Xerxes himself, and Resheth and Winds of Death. Their Legion player is playing Lilith 3 in Oracles, running with triple Angels and a Carnivian, as well as a Naga and a Seraph. And then Kallus 1 in Primal Terrors. Notably, though, what's his name? Gudrun the Wanderer. And their Krix player has 9 Slayer Lich 3, but for his last 9 points in the list, is taking his Unicephalix Overlords and a Soul Trapper, and then Scar 1, Double Engine, 4 Stalker, Double Max Riders. So with that being said, Jake, going into this round, I know you didn't have the whole night pair. What was the thoughts going into this round?
So this time, we wanted to get... I didn't want to play the Kallus player because playing Kallus against Kallus will be like two slugs trying to fuck each other. It would be the most miserable game ever. It's like, oh, who's going to feed first? My chosen charge, your chosen. This game is so much fun. My birds run in front of your birds. Ooh. It's not a fun game. So I was just like, please don't give me that. And then I was like, whoever gets this, just talk to me really quick and I'll tell you what to do. So I like prepped Keith because Keith ended up taking that matchup. I prepped Keith and I was like, this is what you do to beat that.
So was that was the only match you were kind of like, just keep me away from that slug fucking?
There are some other problem lists. Like anytime you have a really good range presence, it hurts. But the Gunbjorn list only had like the Glacier King as his warpy, so I could play into that, but he also had Kolgrimma. Kolgrimma can be kind of hard for my list just because she has a lot of ability to clear infantry and try to stationary my unit leaders with her sprays if you're not careful with like proper placement. So I didn't want to play against trolls, but I wasn't trying to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could take the trolls to give everybody else like the matchups they felt more comfortable with, I was going to do it.
So do you remember if you guys were on tables or matchups this round?
We were on... I think we were on matchups.
And if you remember, do you remember who they led off with?
I do not. I do not remember. All I know is that in this matchup, I ended up... Oh, no. So we picked matchups. They got tables. Because right. At the end, there was Rasheth, Scorn, and was there a Protector player?
They do not have a Protector player.
All I know is that at the end, I ended up taking Rasheth away from Brent because Brent didn't want to play Rasheth. He didn't want to play those lists because he also had the other list with Xerxes and the Desert or Hydra, and that list is really bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up taking that away from him, and Rasheth is notoriously like a really hard matchup for Primal Terrors. So I took that away from him knowing that it was going to be one of my harder matchups so that he could have a better chance to win.
So that with doing so, it put Brent into their Lich player. So it was Siege 2 versus 9 Slayers, and you grabbed the Rasheth player playing Kallus 1.
And in surprise, he played Rasheth.
Yeah, I mean, Rasheth is pretty good.
Sorry.
I was going to say, it doesn't seem like either of those have a tremendous range presence for the Desert Hydra to kind of, do it at once with its Animus in the middle of the table.
Yeah. And then other matchups were Heath played Slayers into Kallus. Kallus won.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jeremy ended up playing...
Scar and the Gunbjorn.
Scar into who?
Gunbjorn.
Gunbjorn, I believe.
Gunbjorn. And then the final table was Mike into...
Mike hit their Kruger 2 player. It says Mike had Harbinger. If this is correct, it was apparently round in one round. It was wrong in one round already.
Yeah, so we're just going off the site. So anyone listening, if you know otherwise, don't kill us. We're going off the information we have.
Those matchups seem appropriate from what I remember.
So you end up with Kallus and Rasheth. So anything you want to tell us about that one?
So in this game... We ended up rolling off, and I ended up winning the roll. My opponent picked the side. He picked the side that had a little bit more space for his two derp turtles to kind of hang out. My side had a house that was like halfway in my zone, my rectangle zone, which is a good spot to like hide Kallus behind. That house is also really good because it blocks part of my zone, so it gives him less landing space when he wants to try to come into my zone. It also separates my left side of the table from my middle of the board because it's this weird like shaped house. It's really hard to explain, but it basically allowed me to like heavily protect my zone. So like when Kallus feeds and tries to run and tries to jam you out of the zone, due to the terrain, it also helped even more. Key things that happened in this game One, when Gudra doesn't have a flag to stand on, he kind of just runs at you. And he just tries to tie up as many models as he can. That's his job. Key points of the game is that on turn two, I ran my Bladebringer to the center of the board in order to draw as many possible attacks into him on the fee turn instead of my army. Hoping that I would draw the Venator shots, hoping I would draw Turtle shots, just anything that would help my my actual army last multiple turns on the table.
So because
when Rasheth feats, and I make incubis, my incubis aren't defense 16, they're defense 14, which is way more manageable than if they were 16.
So did the Blightbringer end up going down early in that game, or?
Oh, yeah, he died top of two. Or not top of two, bottom of two. I ran him to the middle of the board. I'm like, here he is, kill him. It was a tactical sacrifice.
And is that the only Warbeast that your Kallus runs?
It also has a Harrier. My Harrier was hiding. He's hiding in the back behind the house with Kallus. Notable roles of the game, Gudrun got into like seven models. He was so excited. He like walked up there. He's like, I'm going to wreck these models. And then he rolled double ones on his first attack.
Oh,
derpy Gudrun.
Did anyone hit matchups they weren't looking for this round?
No, I think everybody was in like neutral matchups. I didn't want to play Rasheth, but I took that in order to help Brent out. Because Brent didn't want to play the all the huge bases.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you end up winning your game? Because I'm not looking at the same one Brad has, so I don't have the results.
So I won my game on scenario. So at one point
with Kallus,
I won my game on scenario. Shocker.
That seems strange.
So he has to make an aggressive play to stop me from scoring. So he ends up eventually trampling a turtle to the middle of the board, killing model, shooting my objective, killing it. He rolls enough shots and kills it at dice off three with his turtle and like a help from a shaman shooting it with a ghost shot, and then gets into my zone. So he scores one and prevents me from scoring my zone. So on the left side of the board, in the circle zone, I have a very strong presence there because I split my chosen early one unit over there and try to get them as far away from Rasheth as possible so when he feeds, they won't be in his control area and they're going to be around a couple turns. So this whole left zone, for the most of the game, had this unit of chosen just slaughtering anything trying to contest. What ends up happening is that this turtle is in my zone, and if I end up killing the turtle, and then I can easily score the left zone, I can win on scenario that turn. I'm pretty up on time, so I sit there and I like math it out multiple times. I put some models into him to try to bring him down to, you know, a manageable amount of life. I only get him down to 24 life, and then I have to sit there and contemplate if I charge Kallus in at it or not. And I sat there and I thought about it for like 20 minutes. Whether or not I was actually going to charge my caster in at this turtle. I'm looking at the game. I'm like, he killed my objective. He's in my zone. He's already stopping me from like really pushing the scenario. And I felt like I was going to lose the game. So I was like, if I roll well and dice him, I can get out of this game. So after 20 minutes of thinking, I finally stop. And I'm like, all right, I think I can still win this game not throwing it away like this. And I run my caster into the left zone. And I just make a play to try to score on the scenario one more turn and end up winning. And it ends up pulling out that way for me. I'm able to still stop him from scoring my rectangle zone because of where the house is placed. And I have one of my Hellmouths tucked behind the house in like the corner left of the zone. And he can't get the Siege Animantrax to it. So he can't score my zone. So the only zone he can score is his left zone, my right zone. And we both go up at the same time. We'll both tick up. So at the end of the turn, I'll be like 5-1. Or 5-2, was it 5-2? I forgot what it is. But basically, due to how I positioned the Chosen in the left zone, I kind of just boxed him out and he didn't get into the zone. And then I was able to contest the far zone and end up winning on scenario.
Very nice. And then the matchups end up working out, and you guys go 5-0 that round.
Yeah, we did. I was very happy with everybody. I'm glad Keith played the Kallus player and was able to pull that through. It can be a very frustrating matchup if you don't know how to play it.
And then on to the last round, where you end up playing the England Knights. Although when I was checking this, watching, they actually had you guys against Tesla and England Lions against Knights. And I don't know if that was just while they were doing the paperwork or if they did that and decided to change it.
So how the WTC works is that unless otherwise not possible, as in like a finals undefeated scenario, you will never play against your own country.
Got it.
So that's just how the pairing process worked, is that they got paired up due to how the process was, like strength of schedule or something.
Just how the program did it for them?
Yeah. So then they swapped.
Yeah, they just swapped us like up and down really quick. And they're like, there you go. Now you're playing these people.
Yep. So you guys end up into England Knights, which we
have. Want me to run through it?
Go ahead, buddy, if you got it.
Yep, sure. So they have a Signar, a Krix, a Menoth, a Kador, and one Grimkin. So four War Machine, one Hordes this time. Signar players playing Sloan in Heavy Metal, Firefly, four Hunters, four Minutemen, and then Kane with Ace. And then Haley 3 and Gravediggers. This one is the Alexia version. The Menoth player has Harvey in Faithful Masses and all the usual smattering of solos. And Higher Claimers single Judicator with Vengers and more Exemplar models. We have a Krix player running Scar 3 in Slaughter Fleet. This list, interesting enough, has four Slayers. And then double Max Boarding Party. Also for its Mercenary inclusion has Cephalix Overlords. And it has no Marauders. It has no Blood Gorges running Marauders with Jessica. And then it's paired with Lich 3 with nine Slayers, also with Overlords instead of the Ironmongers. Their Kador player has Old Witch 2 in Jaws, with Jack Marshalled Behemoth and Rager on the Ford Sears, and actually Malakov running a Marauder as well. For units, has double Eliminators and Min Mechanics. Also has Strakov 2 in Legion of Steel, triple Max Pikeman, Great Bears, Ulan Markov, Sophia, all that nonsense. Has Eilish, Rager, Juggernaut for the last couple models. And then lastly, their Grimkin player is Old Witch 3 in Dark Menagerie and Dreamer in Dark Menagerie. Similar question to before, Keith. Not Keith, sorry.
Man,
I was just looking at this list. What was the, what players were trying to avoid someone else? Who was trying to land on someone else?
You're the worst, Brad.
So I was looking at Keith's list.
He just really wanted Keith on the podcast. Couldn't get him, so he settled on me today. It's okay. We know how it really is.
Jay, he pivoted when he should have swept.
I'm out.
Can't dip into his not approved terms. Yeah.
So in this matchup, I couldn't really play into Harvey. I couldn't really play into Dreamer. I can't really play into Scar 3 because that's what the Krix player is going to drop into me. And I can't play into, was there a Haley 3 in that one?
Yeah, too? There was Jake Wellstrop.
Yeah, so there was four games that I couldn't play into. So I just said, hey, wherever you want me, you just put me there. Because those are all like what I would call rough matchups for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just did the pairing so that they could get the most advantageous picks in their favor or whatever they felt comfortable with or try. And then I ended up falling to Scar 3.
So were you guys on tables or matchups that round?
We were on matchups.
Okay. So did they save you till the end to land you into one of the two, or did they put you up earlier?
I think I fell to the end.
Okay. So if you were one of the last two, I know, just to jump ahead a little bit, you actually ended up playing their Krix player. What was the other option of the other player you could have played against?
It was... What did Keith play against?
High Reclaimer, or the Metal player. Yeah.
It was that. So yeah. I played against Scar 3 before. It tends to be on the rough side if you're playing Animag. It's somewhat playable if you play Kallus. It's not absolutely like unwinnable. No game's unwinnable. But Kallus actually has more game into that than Animag does, I feel.
It's not a slam dunk for the Scar player, you would say.
Yeah, it's a game, and we have to play it out. And
are you using his banned terms on purpose?
I was.
he's never coming back.
I know. No, I know. Sorry. We blew it when you rolled five tough checks, so it didn't matter.
I'm surprised you said yes to begin with. That's why we didn't have to do the outreach this time.
All right, Jake. Sorry. We're for our shenanigans. Carry on.
You're good. So in my game, this was probably one of the games that I played the poorest of the weekend. And the terrain was really interesting. It was like one side had this house that kind of split your deployment zone. And what ended up happening is I won the role and decided to go first, and he put me on the side which split my army. So having played huge bases before and having put other people in that situation, I knew better than to do that. So right at list, so like winning the role and choosing to go first, I messed up there. And then on top of that, like my first turn positioning with my birds after I ran them up around this house is that my unit leader, after I ran my birds, had to be in a spot to keep everybody in formation, but that only spot in formation would put him in a spot where if Scar wanted to shoot him, he'd hit multiple models. So I messed up that, and my first turn was just really terrible. I played like shit my first turn.
Not to make you relive it, but what had, like, what came up that you feel like you played like shit your first turn?
Model positioning, taking the side with the house. Or not taking the side with the house, going first and letting him tell me to be on the side with the house, because I know that was going to happen. I knew that was going to split my army, and that Kallus wouldn't be central to my army to feed on. He'd be kind of like off on one side, having to like really struggle to push his feet over to one side of the table. That was the problem.
Seems reasonable. So how did you end up clawing your way back into that game?
So house split, and he also had a house on his side, sort of near his, like near the center circle zone, and it kind of split his army as well, but not as bad as like my side. And the majority of the fighting that mattered kind of happened on my right side, where his Scar was and his a couple of his Marauders and Gerlach and some heavies. For the most part, he did not roll incredibly well. Like, I understand dice is part of the game. You know, like, I am a very emotional player, and I let dice, like, take me from 0 to 100 in, like, a couple seconds. Like, they really tilt me at times. His dice were not with him for the majority of that game.
Okay. So as for the team, though, like we kind of mentioned earlier, Denegra 1 landed into their Menoth player, Keith playing. Then we had Mike Pierre playing into their Grimkin player. Brent Simon got the Signar mirror. And Jeremy Lee played Scar 3 into Dreamer for their Grimkin player. Is that kind of the... Sorry.
You said Mike Pryor played into Grimkin.
I'm sorry. Did their Kador player also have...
Mike Pryor played against... Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. You just said Old Witch, and I maybe you said Old Witch 3, or if that's Old Witch 2. I'm not sure.
Checking. Sorry.
That's okay. But, yeah, Mike Pryor ended up playing against Old Witch 2, who's the Kador 1. And then Jeremy Lee ended up playing into Dreamer, the Scar 3. And then Keith played into... Was it a High Reclaimer?
Yes. Keith played in the Higher Climber. Yeah, it doesn't show factions here, so I misread the Old Witch incorrectly.
And then Brent ended up playing, I think, Siege 2 into Haley 3 again.
It's not you, Brad. It's actually written wrong. It shows Old Witch 3, but the list itself is Old Witch 2 and Kador. So.
Got it. And did he play Siege into Haley 3? Because this is showing the Haley 3 mirror.
It was Haley 3 mirror.
Oh, that seems like fucking awful.
Yeah, I know that because... Jake has been on the Signar cast, and Brent is a co-host, so when they got matched up against each other in a Haley 3 mirror, we had a good time talking about that in the Signar chat.
So how, just real quick, not to stop talking about Jake, but how miserable is a Haley 3 mirror?
It's real bad. It's gross. It's awful. It's like a lot of mirrors where it's just awful. You're both Cloud Wall. Like, there's just so many... I don't know. That matchup is fucking gross. I wouldn't want to play it. Just be ready for a 7-turn grind. Jake, back to your game.
My opponent had some poor dice on some turns, and like poor dice is like Draconic Blessing, Gerlach Slaughterborn going in at a Chosen who's armor 21, and he does like 3 damage to him. Like, that's really shitty.
Yeah.
He's a Weapon Master, dice off 6.
Yep, that's bad.
Yeah, so he should have killed him there. And like another one was like his Slayer walked up to one of my Chosen and combo struck it at POW 24 and rolled double ones. And it lived and healed, and then he hit it again and it lived and healed, and it's just standing like, are you actually trying to play this game?
Jesus.
Yeah, like his dice that turn were just absolute garbage. And he was a really clean player. He played a very tight game, and... He was very mechanical, and you could tell that he had his reps in. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He was talking on his turn. He was really just on top of his, like, play. Like, you could see that as I'm, like, standing, like, listening to him talk to himself. Like, he was just, like, super in tune to his ability and just how his army worked. It was really awesome to, like, watch. Like, at the end of the game, like, I had to do some janky stuff where it's, like, my unit's really, like, on the left side really pulled apart, and I had to get one chosen from this unit to charge across the table and kill one other model that's blocking the Blightbringer from getting to his Scar 3. And I had to, like, run my unit leader and use, like, these little steppers that my opponent let me borrow to, like, see if I could run around Gudrun, who was blocking my way to run because I activated him first like a dumb shit, and run around Gudrun and get in formation so that he could make his charge. And then that unit leader also had to take free strikes on the way, too, because I fucked it all up. So I end up engineering it. He runs, takes the free strikes. He lives. My other guy, like, charges, kills the guy. He doesn't tough, thankfully. And then the Blightbringer got to Scar.
Nice.
There was, like, multiple. He had to fail, like, 3 tough checks in order for me not to get to Scar. And if he passed any one of those 3, I couldn't get to
it. If that happened, would you end up losing that game? Like, was that the game on the right there? Or
it wasn't the game, but I was definitely in. Like, so on the side of the board that I was on, the right side, like, he was, like, kind of low on models. I had a Blightbringer. He had, like, a Slayer, Scarred, a couple Marauders. But on his, on my left side, I only had a couple chosen, and he had, like, the rest of the Marauders. He had Cephalix Overlords. He had 2 Slayers on that left side. So my left side was just, like, stalling out that portion of his army while I tried to fight on the right side. At that point, when I went that deep, and the Kalos was on 0, so he could probably just reshot me with Scar if he can get line of sight to her. If I couldn't kill the models in front, I would have to take my Blightbringer and pull him back to block line of sight to Kalos, mm-hmm. and just kind of, like, sit around for another turn and hope he doesn't die to a single Slayer. So I don't want to say I would die right there, but I probably wouldn't win the game in the long game.
So all in all, though, as the event wraps up, this round sees the team go down 2-3, putting you guys to 4-2 over the weekend. So as we kind of hinted at before, I shouldn't say hinted because we said it explicitly, you guys ended up landing in 8th. Which, just to point out real quick, is the top-ranked North American team. So take that, Canada.
Also had the highest strength of schedule, and had they won that round, would have taken 2nd, which would have been super sweet.
You have to note, though, is that the team that we played, the England team that we played, you know, they were a very good team, very strong team. They did take home the 3rd place trophy.
Yeah, that one seemed highly coveted.
It was funny. I didn't understand why people were saying that all week. I was like, third? Is that like 1st through 3rd? Like, that's what I was asking. I was like, what does that even mean? And then, like, Zosha's like slapping her head, like, do you even like pay attention to anything that's happening? She just said no. And then somebody was like, look at this trophy. It says 3rd. And I'm just like laughing my ass off. Like, 3 hours later,
Jake finally gets it.
And Zosha sent me a picture of it that I obviously ignored.
Sure. Which, by the way, I said this off cast, but I was watching, my wife took my daughter somewhere Sunday morning, so I was watching the last couple rounds. Zosha did a great job on the stream commentating. So
they said you did a very good job on the stream commentating.
Why isn't Zosha just on the cast at this point? She's in the same room.
Yeah, she's out over on the couch just like doodling on her phone. She's judging people on her phone.
Awesome.
Nice.
So with WTC being done, and, you know, we get this data, even though it's hard to, like, get the true picture of it. How valuable is that data? You know, I'm just an average player. I'm looking at it. I'm seeing Signar, the faction that I'm playing right now, came in 2nd to worst. Animag just crushed everybody. Is there anything I can glean out of that from the state of the meta?
You can. So the WDC is a very interesting format. It allows you to come together as a team and try your best to pair up your team into the most favorable matchups. It's not always going to happen. You're going to have to sacrifice some players to get better matchups for the team. It's always possible for any player to win any game regardless of how bad the matchups are. There's a lot of amazing players across the world who have played really hard matchups that were deemed unwinnable and have won them. That being said, I don't feel like anybody going 6-0 or 5, like, I'm trying to think of how to say it correctly. The overall record of players might show you, like, their overall individual skill, but you have to take kind of that with a grain of salt too, because you don't know if, like, this Crix player got dumped into every favorable matchup on the table, because that's what your team is trying to do. When you go to a tournament or a convention, inevitably, your two lists try to cover everything, but sometimes you can't cover one or two matchups and you just try to hard dodge them. Like, as a Legion player, I never want to play against Haley 3. That's not fun. I don't understand how anybody has fun playing against that list.
But you have Iosa, you see right through the clouds.
Oh, yeah, and you just run at them and they're rat like 300. That's fun, too. You're like, you know why Fianna 2 died? That's the reason why Fianna 2 died. You run across the board, you're like, what's your rat? Casual rat 15. What's your defense? 18.
Got her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why she died. That's why she's not being played as much right now. Defense doesn't matter.
So I guess the same could be extrapolated over to the faction as a whole, not just looking at a specific player, right? Like, the faction stats, there's so many variables that could have gone in there. Were they taking a grenade for their team and being put into a bad match to give somebody else a better match? Were they... whatever. There's a thousand different variables. So, I mean, how much... You know, because Pete kind of mined some of this data just to kind of share and just be out there just for information. And, of course, that gets taken and people start pulling things from that and trying to say factions are X and factions are Y. You know, is any of that worthwhile, or is that all have to be taken in a vacuum because this is one team event, albeit, you know, the largest team event in the world?
I feel like it needs to be taken in the context of a vacuum for the most part of it. Obviously each faction has their ups and downs. They have their weaknesses. They have their low points. They have their high points. Everybody goes through it. If you notice, like, factions that gone through the CID, other than mercenaries, I think, like, mercenaries have a very good win rate with Ostrom, who's like carrying that faction right now. But, most of the factions that did well or had a good win rate are the factions that went through CID overall is what I noticed out of it. Did you guys notice that or no?
I mean, so just to pull up the same thing in WMH Army Reporter, it shows the top factions, I believe. Where is that? So I think you can see the win rate for each faction.
Well, I think one of the things that's missing, and you even said it, was the player skill, right? Like, there's no way to quantify that other than almost... you know, as a narrative-based kind of thing. Like, I can sit here and say, okay, based off of my own little window, and I'm sorry, this is going to sound totally shitty, but I know for a fact, Brad, you're 2-0 into Jake Van Meter, right?
Yeah,
pure okay, skill. Okay, well, no, times. I'm just using this as an example, right?
Yeah, pure skill.
So based off of that knowledge, I can only sit there and say, well, obviously Brad is a better player, right? But yeah. So that's one of the hard things in saying, you know, that, hey, we had a good discussion about this in one of our chats, in that, you know, do you want your team to be all A players? Do you want your team to be a couple of A's, a couple of B's, and a C? You know, like, what is the good, you know, how do you quantify player skill in this format? And I think it's almost impossible.
I would have to agree. It is really hard to determine overall. Like, everybody, if you see people play, you can determine if that person is a good player in, like, different aspects of the game. But being able to go in depth, like you're saying, it is very hard to do.
I mean, also in something like this where you have countries. I mean, some of the countries, there aren't a ton of War Machine players, right? So I'm not trying to say some countries are, you know, don't have great players. I'm sure they're all better than the average War Machine player, but that can skew some of those statistics as well, right? When you're looking at when you're trying to only pick faction stats off of an event like that.
Definitely.
So is there anything you can take away maybe for team format settings? Is there something that you might be able to apply either for ATC or OTC or next year's WTC if you plan on attending again? Is there any large takeaways in team events that you can take away from things that happened this weekend?
I think faction composition matters a lot. There were a lot of teams this year who either had double Crix or double Signar. And teams that have double factions on the team, they ask specific questions, because sometimes, like, a hard dodge for somebody in that team format is that they have to avoid Crix. Well, when you have double Crix, you have this situation where you can start trying to pincer somebody to make them fall into one of the bad matchups. So it makes pairing process just a little bit harder if you're trying to avoid that one player, or they end up just giving that player away to a bad matchup to try to get a more favorable matchup. So, like, a double faction selection, if the casters pose specific questions.
Is it so much the faction pairing, or is it pairing similar stylists, like pairing, say, together a, I'm just going to make up casters real quick, like a Sorcia 3 and a Haley 3, two Cloudwall casters, or is it really much more faction specific, you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, obviously, some factions ask different questions. Some warlock or warcasters within the faction ask specific questions towards, like, a specific meta build. So, like, Haley 3 is meta, so somebody might take something that is, like, Cloud Walls into Haley 3, and it's, like, this stupid game where people are, like, I'm in the middle of the board, and the other people are, like, I'm here, too. Let's have a party. I have no idea where I'm going with that, by the way. So please help me.
Sir.
I was going to let you finish because I was curious, but
there was no finishing. Like, I'm just talking out of my ass at this point. Sure.
No, I think we're doing a good job of getting to the point. At least, especially from your side of it, because there's no denying you're a good player, right?
Some would say the best ever.
Probably so. Yeah.
So here's how I win games and conventions. I dodge hard matchups. I hope my opponent doesn't roll well, and I don't mess up a lot. That's how I win games.
So
you could sell that formula. That's the hidden recipe.
What, don't roll like shit?
I mean, that helps.
I mean, that's what you told me. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to hopefully roll better dice than you, and you're not going to question any of my rules because I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, well, I don't know what to say to that. I'm more scared than I was before.
So, Jake, for WTC next year, are you going to apply?
That has been undetermined at this time.
Gotcha.
I went this year because I remember sitting home during the 2016 or 2017. Oh my God, I can't get my years right. I'm so old now.
Man, you're so 2013.
I know, right? But I was watching the live streams and I saw people in the chat just saying, oh, the US is shit. They can't play. They're so behind us. They don't know anything. And I sat there just like watching that. And I got really frustrated. It really upset me. So that's the only reason why I applied this year. I know we didn't win. I know we went 4-2. I was happy that we had a winning record. The last time I went was back in Ireland. I went 1-5. I did not have a really good showing, and I was very happy to turn that around.
Yeah, as you should be.
So you only went because Europe made you mad?
They made me mad and said that the U.S. was shit, and I wanted to go back and play to show them that we're not shit. Oh, there goes Zosha. What? We are shit? She's kind of nodding that we are.
Oh, okay.
She put a little poem she showed me earlier. It was like, oh, she's going to send it to you guys right now.
Oh, perfect.
Awesome.
Oh, so we can edit out this dead time real quick. I'll give you a clap when we get it.
Awesome.
I'm not editing anything. I'm at work. I am doing none of that. It is all going up.
So, Jake, I watched some of the stream. I saw the tables. I heard the myth of the WTC tables. If I am a WTC hopeful, should I throw down my 7 pieces of terrain for practice and then throw down another 14?
Sure. That sounds fun.
Okay.
I like playing games where the terrain on the table matters. I like playing a game where there's, well, I also play Legion, so I like seeing a shit ton of terrain on the table. I love it. I'm like, yeah, look at all this terrain. Fuck you, I'm Legion. Like, this is so much fun. Like, that's how I look at most terrain, even though we struggle with walls and we don't see through force anymore and buildings stop most of our shit from moving because nobody plays anything but Primal Terrors right now. But I like seeing all the terrain on the table. It's a lot of fun.
Do we have any, you guys got any other questions? I was trying to think if there's anything else to take away from WGC. I was like looking at some of the sweet lists that people bring, because you can kind of do that in this format where you could bring a list that you may not bring in a normal Steamroller. So that's always a fun part. Anything else to take away from that, though?
If I can kind of infer one thing, because we haven't talked about it yet this cast, but we've talked about it for the past handful of months. Jake, I think you're actually coming down for the Boker Brawl this year.
I am.
Do your lists from WTC carry over? Are there changes to them? Is it this is to help me plan, of course, but also for conversation.
I'm going to play the Callus 1 list for the remainder of the year through War Machine Weekend, and then I'll end up shelving it for next year. I'll make two new lists for Captain Con. That's kind of what I always do. And then I think the other list I'm going to bring down is something with probably Golab or RFP in it, just to fight all these tough and these recursion lists like Terminus and things like that.
Well, fuck.
I'm still waiting for this poem, by the way.
Did you send him the poem yet? I have it right here. No, she wants to send it. I can't send it. You want me to send it to you?
Just have her hop on and read it.
They want you to hop on and read it.
Ooh, poetry by Zosia.
Here you go. You get to hop on really quick.
How does this even work?
Hi, Zosia.
While you're working it.
What the fuck? Why is it stupid? This is yours. All right, I made it. I'm
awesome.
Here.
Let's do it.
Is this Grant?
Yep, I'm
it's
on.
Grant, Pete, and Brad. Hi.
Hi, Grant.
Hi.
Hi.
Fuck you. Fuck. Fuck you guys.
All right.
So, Grant, I sent you my wonderful poem that I made for Jake today.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's on the Facey books.
Yeah, I got it.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Sorry your team went 4-2.
Yep. And it is the picture of a picture of the standings down, showing them
final
at 8th place.
I work really hard. But that is amazing. Anyway, I'll give you back to Jake. He's crying in the corner.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, I'm back.
All right, buddy. Good stuff. I just want to know, when did she show you that? Was it like the day?
Earlier today.
It was today.
Earlier today. Like, I was just doing like work earlier, and throughout the day she sends me very inspiring and very helpful memes and nice poems, such as, "You suck, you guys went 4-2. What? Her poem rhymes. That's what she told me.
That's basically how my wife would be if I ever got good at anything. She'd just keep reminding me how much I suck. So it'd be great.
So before we started talking on the cast, I ranted for a second about something, and then I told you guys I wasn't going to say it on the podcast, but what did I say? Do you remember?
It was along the lines of list innovation.
Yeah, we were talking about basically the concept of net decking. So, you know, I'm going to play Signar. I go to Discount Games Incorporated. I pull down number one list is Haley 3, and I go play it.
Yeah, so the reason that happens is because there's a lot of people who have a limited amount of time to play the game or in the week to actually dedicate towards playing the game. Those players, they want to go to a local tournament, they want to do well, they see what's doing well with the factions that they're playing, and they might netlist something because they know it's what's feared right now is what people are winning with. That is both a good thing and a bad thing. People wonder why, you know, lists become stagnant after a while, and people... You don't really see, like, list diversity, I guess is what I'll call it, right? So what ends up happening is that the meta begins to shift when people start stepping outside of their comfort level and try to open up and find new lists to build. Every warlock in the faction, regardless of their power level or how derpy they seem or even how terrible some of them are, each one of them, they have an application somewhere in the game, in the faction, in a list design. When you bring new lists and new casters and try to get the gears working a little bit different, it allows just list innovation to happen. And if you bring a new caster that has this really quirky thing to it that does well against, let's say, Haley 3 or Callus 1, you're going to start kind of turning the meta. It kind of like an example would be like last year in War Machine Weekend 2017, it was the first year that I brought Callus 1. And I was, he was my secret list, and I played him in only one game, and it was a second round of War Machine Weekend. Nobody saw that game except for Chuck, who was my opponent. So that was my first time bringing Kallus back to the table in a very long time. But with how live the scenarios were, it was like the right choice, because Legion was known for its like low model count, beast armies, and this was completely different. It was a scenario-based list, and it just had a ton of models to put on the table. But it was that type of innovation that allowed the list design to kind of change, I guess.
Yeah,
and every faction has the ability to do that, but it's up to the individuals to take the time, which not everybody has, to try new things, take it to tournaments, take it to local events, take it to conventions, and try to really work all the gears in your faction.
It was better the first time, but you did pretty. You did a pretty good recap of what you said before.
Well, I think to kind of echo what he's saying is, how you said you kind of redesign your lists post, or when the next year hits. Any spoilers to what Warlocks we're looking at now that we're not currently playing?
For Legion, you got Kallus, too. Some people are playing Kallus right now, but not a lot. You have Derek, kind of dark horsing him right now, and some other people. I have Veil 1 I want to play. I have Thags 2 I'm going to play. I have Krissa I'm going to play.
Ooh, you're going to get some Krissa. Going to get some Krissa on the table.
I'm going to get some Krissa on the table. And I have two Bethane lists right now, but they probably won't make it through.
All right, talk to me about Bethane. What you thinking?
You put her in the garbage.
Okay.
Done.
Perfect.
No, she's really good with... like, Bloodthorn, her spell list is amazing, except for Invocation of Blood. That spell is garbage and shouldn't be on her card. You can take that out and give her, like, Burning Ash Cloud. That'd be a really cool spell to have, right? If everybody else has one, we should have one, too.
Yeah, it'd be totally fine. Yeah, it'd be totally fine for Legion to have a Cloud Wall.
Oh, please. You don't think there's enough Isle of Sight in the game that just ignores it anyway or makes it go away? Or you think our beasts benefit that much from being able to shoot and block line of sight like everybody else has it?
There's enough anti-cloud tech. I don't know. It might be okay now.
Do that one.
Legion beasts are shit, right? They're overcosted right now. Even at 16 points for Scythians or Ravagors, like, you never see Scythians or Ravagors. You see them once in a blue moon. You see Children of the Dragon, because Children of the Dragon is one of our best themes, and even then, it's a shit theme because it's so restrictive. You get three heavies and a bunch of self-sustaining units. Primal Terrors went through CID, and it's played the most because it's the most powerful theme list that we have. That gives us pretty sturdy models and Animag. Animag's really, really good. She really is. Ravens of War is shit. And Oracles is rough right now because the list and model options in the list are very limited. And our beasts are not that good right now.
So what makes... is Animag the best Primal Terrors list? Just kind of in a vacuum.
No. I don't think. I think it's Kallus. Personally, he can be aggressive, but his feat also is defensive. When he feats, so something I found out from the WTC a couple years ago is that I took, in 2015 when I won 5, not only did I not play at my best, but I took Veil 2 and I took Abu 2. And both of those lists have feats. Like, if you're trying to go for a kill, you use your feat with Veil 2 and you try to arc spells and roll dice. But that's all in your hand. Abbey 2, when you feat, you go in and kill models, and you're hoping the rest of your army rolls well and you kill enough stuff. Those are both offensive feats. Kallus has a defensive feat. So when he feats, and he literally puts models in front of you, he's like, I feat. My feat's defensive. This is what it does. You deal with it. So he takes all the stuff off of your chest and your hands and puts it on your opponent to deal with. Animag, when she feats, she needs to get as much work as possible done with her feet in order to push through and make sure that she wins the game. If you feed at the wrong time and don't get enough, probably not enough, you'll probably lose the game. So that's the difference between, like, Kallus and Anime. Kallus, his feet is all on your opponent. How they trigger it, what they do, it takes all the pressure off of you as a player. And it's amazing.
I like it. But yeah, I mean, what led to that was like we alluded to earlier, there was some posts about some people talking about trying to basically say, oh, X win rate from this for this faction means the faction shit. And we kind of got down that road of that. And so that led you into this conversation of innovating and trying different things. And like, oh, hey, just because everybody says Gudrun isn't good, like, fucking put him on the table and find out. He's a baller at scoring flags.
Please don't.
All right. All right. Or don't. That's fine.
Oh, my God. Forget about him. You play him like three times. Like, hell, even in your first game, you'd be like, man, this guy's scoring my flag. This guy is so good.
So,
do not want.
All right. We are closing in on 2 hours. So, Jake, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for coming on and staying on this long and not just being like, fuck you guys. I'm out. Congrats again. I know 6-0, like we said, but you guys took eighth. And after everyone talking shit, I think that was a good showing. And we'll see you at Poker Brawl.
Thanks for having me on. I'll see you guys at Poker Brawl.
Right. Not Grant, because he's going to a wedding.
Not me, because I have the one wedding of the year that conflicts with War Machine that has now led me to have a wedding every weekend, apparently.
Yeah, War Machine's secondary. We all know that.
I mean, I disagree, but I don't think my wife... I don't think she agrees. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Jake, thanks again for coming on, man. I'm Grant.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Pete.
Thanks for listening.